May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God. Amen. The checkout line is not stocked with young parents in mind. Tiny hands take hold of all those inviting packages of candy conveniently positioned at a child's eye level. And mom's trying to unload the cart and gently says, "We are not getting candy today. Please put it back." You know that's not going to work. I know that's not going to work. Mom knows that's not going to work. No toddler in the history of toddlers has taken "we're not getting candy today" for an answer. The struggle continues. It has to continue. Parents have no choice because in the back of their minds they're thinking, "Win this battle now because it won't be cute when they're 12. Mom continues to multitask, digging the credit card from her purse as not to hold up the line while trying to pry the M&Ms out of those defiant little hands. But then, Junior busts out his best weapon. His bottom hits the floor, he screams and cries, he flails his arms and legs. Mom tries to pick him up, but even a tiny 3-year-old body is hard to carry if it doesn't want to be carried. The screaming continues as Mom quietly and calmly says what all the books say you should say. "I know you're very upset, but we can't always have what we want. We have lots of good things to eat at home. Maybe we'll get some M&Ms another day." James says, "Be slow to anger." James is not writing to toddlers. As we grow, we learn skills to help us manage our feelings, so we aren't throwing fits in the checkout line. Although the lesson doesn't always stick for everyone, has anyone ever witnessed an adult temper tantrum? That's why you fight it out when they're toddlers, right? And James is not written to toddlers, but the fact that he's writing about anger to grown folks shows us that grown folks can also struggle to appropriately manage angry feelings. Now, James is part of a unique handful of letters in the New Testament that are actually meant for circulation among a variety of churches rather than written to a specific church in a specific city. And 2,000 years later, this general letter continues to offer the church general wisdom. For example, "Let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger, for human anger does not produce God's righteousness." And yet, we look around our world and there seems to be quite a bit to be angry about. And we feel it in our bodies just like that kid in the grocery store. When you're angry, your heart rate, blood pressure, and body temperature all rise. And your body floods with adrenaline and cortisol. We know this feeling. Everyone knows this feeling, right? It's not pleasant. Anger is powerful in what it can do to us physically, but it's also powerful in the way that it can affect our behavior. Anger motivates, and it can cause us to do and say things we regret, things we might not say or do if we weren't experiencing this physical rush. Have you ever spoken a word in anger you wish you could take back? Have you ever had someone speak a word in anger to you that you wish you could unhear? This is why James urges us to be slow to anger and slow to speak. The world we live in doesn't offer us, though, a lot of time for slowing down our emotions. In fact, when it comes to anger, there are forces in our culture that actually want to speed things up. There are those who have a vested interest in making our anger work for them and their agendas. Now, do you remember those old playground merry-go-rounds? They weren't known for their safety, but they were a lot of fun. You remember how the merry-go-round took a little bit of work to get going? You might have some actually seated on it, but there was some poor kid who had to, like, try to run and get it going in a circle. But once it got started, it didn't take long for it to really be moving. And the runner can jump on then, and the squeals of joy beckon other kids to try their hand at timing it just right, jumping on too. Now, this fun is obviously reserved for children, The rest of us would have to pregame with Dramamine. But the playground merry-go-round is a helpful image to describe how anger gets a hold of us. Once someone has gotten that merry-go-round going, their noise beckons us also to join in, except instead of joyful squeals, we respond to the sounds of moral outrage, inviting us to hop on and get the thing spinning faster. Have you noticed how we kind of bond over our anger? It's really kind of strange, isn't it? Oh, you're angry already? Well, let me tell you something that will make you even madder. And as our anger ratchets up, rather than wanting to step away from what causes that uncomfortable feeling, we lean into it and find ourselves begging for more. Tell me more outrageous things, please, that will reinforce the anger I'm already feeling. And of course, there are those who are all too happy to provide that for us because it generates clicks and dollars and attention. And before we know it, we're all spinning like that merry-go-round, but it's not merry at all. It's our angry-go-round. And every day, something else wants to add to it until we're spinning out of control. Now imagine, while we're spinning round and round, that we're trying to observe something happening on the solid ground beside us. There's no way we can see it clearly. We're only catching it every little bit as we come around. When we're dizzy from the angry go-round, we no longer can see with clarity, and so we can't properly vet new topics of outrage that are eager to hop on and join in the tornadic activity. We become more and more vulnerable to simplistic renderings of complex problems. We become more and more vulnerable to something called confirmation bias. We become more and more vulnerable to disinformation. Instead of being slow, we are too quick to say, hop on my angry go-round and hang on tight. And we risk becoming so committed to the spinning that we would almost sooner welcome additional angry-making information than information that pleases us. We almost like having our anger confirmed again and again. Now think for a moment about someone you really don't like. And I know we're in church, so we're not supposed to not like people. We love them all. But probably everyone has someone they don't like. You don't have to tell me who it is. But think about them for a moment. Now, would you sooner welcome news that they've done something nice or something that you agree with, or news that they've done another boneheaded thing that further supports your anger at them? Sometimes even adults are like that toddler on the floor in the grocery store, who's beyond comforting by reminders that there are yummy things to eat waiting for him at home. When we get caught up in the angry-go-round, we are ill-equipped to do the one thing James tells us to be quick to do, and that's listen. Really listen. And we see this, on full display during an election year. I've noticed something when I hear people talk about politics, and maybe you have too, and I may be guilty of it myself. Sometimes, this is something we've probably all said to one another at some time or another. I don't understand how anyone could support this person or that person or this policy or that policy. Now, I don't understand could be an admission of our own limitations, right? I don't understand. But that's not usually how we say it. It's not usually how we mean it. We say it more in exasperation than as actual curiosity. More, I don't understand how. And less, I don't understand. What would it take for us to actually be curious about how others see the world, even when, especially when, we disagree? What would it take to keep our feet planted on the ground off the angry-go-round so that we can clearly evaluate information apart from our dizzying anger? Now, notably, James never tells us not to be angry. He tells us to be slow to anger. There are things worth being angry about. But we have a responsibility to properly vet them first, which means we have to slow down. When we're spinning out of control, we can't be clear-eyed about the challenges before us. And despite what nonsense goes on in the media and in the secular world, as Christians, we are still called to address the challenges of the world, even the ones that make us angry, with integrity and with neighbor love. James offers us more wisdom. Be doers of the word and not merely hearers who deceive themselves. For if any are hearers of the word and not doers, they are like those who look at themselves in the mirror, for they look at themselves and on going away immediately forget what they were like. I don't care to mention how many boxes of mac and cheese I've made in my life, but every time I do, I find myself digging the box back out of the recycling, because though I have just read it, I've immediately forgotten the instructions. Now that's embarrassing, but imagine that you walk away from a mirror and you can't remember your own features, can't remember who you saw there. I think a lot of us forget who we are from time to time, and James offers us, as the antidote for this forgetfulness, look into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and persevere, being not hearers who forget, but doers who act. They will be blessed in their doing. Look into the law of liberty. There are two quick things to note about this command. First, law of liberty really seems like an oxymoron, because laws, by definition, curtail freedoms. You are not free to murder your neighbor because of the law. You are not free to drive 100 miles an hour on the Lloyd because of the law. Still, reasonable people would say we are safer and thus freer because these freedoms, to murder our neighbor and to drive 100 miles an hour on the Lloyd, because those freedoms are stripped of everyone. Similarly, James understands God's law to be liberative because it constrains creation in a way that protects and promotes its maximal flourishing. Second, when we find ourselves on an angry-go-round spinning so fast we just might take flight, returning to who we know God to be, and thus who we understand ourselves to be, charts the path forward. When we've walked away from the mirror and forgotten who we are, the best way to remember is to look to God's perfect law of liberty and then act accordingly. James summarizes what we'll find there nicely in the final verse. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world. If we were to boil this down for a bumper sticker, we might say, keep calm and care for the vulnerable. The angry go-round is tempting. It's easier to be mad and get madder than it is to stay grounded and clear-eyed. It's easier to speak first to be sure our views are heard than it is to slow down and really listen. But we are called to do the harder things, to be slow to speak and slow to anger. Today and in the weeks ahead, as we seek to be faithful followers of Jesus during a tumultuous time, let us keep James's teachings at top of mind. It does not matter how others speak. It does not matter what questionable tactics others might employ to stir up discord and anxiety. It doesn't matter if others behave like the toddler in the grocery store. As followers of Jesus, we are meant to be the ones who listen, who tell the truth, and who, when we feel ourselves getting sucked into the torrent, remember who we are and what responsibility is most especially ours: caring for the most vulnerable around us. May we be found up to the task. Thanks be to God. Amen.